South America! Australia! France! Germany! UK! America!
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Better late than never, I hope. Sorry about the slow start, but we're here. What about La Mancha and Alka-Seltzer, Waggy? We'll get all these playback issues sorted out now that I'm home. Sorry about that. The third switch has been thrown. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. You can, of course, find the horn in a wide variety of other locations, places like Dart.fm, Streama.com, Roku devices for your smartphone. We recommend iTunes or iTunes or Stitcher. Their apps are reliable and good. They're listed there. Podcast address is, of course, at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program, Head On the Bob Kincaid. And you can get the podcast at iTunes, too. I'm streaming, but yeah, it's all going out, so we'll hope things improve here momentarily. Well, diddly spit, silence. Time out. Throw the 12th switch, Bob. Okay, so it's recording now, which is even better. And what else? Yeah, everything seems to be working. A big thank you to all of you for putting up with the technical glitches that tend to happen when we're on the road. Although John and I did a bunch of work with the mix desk that I take with me, and I think we knock wood. No, that's not really wood. That's some sort of composition. That's wood. We seem to have that worked out now, so it should be behaving much better in the future. Like I said, it's Thursday, the second day of May. Yesterday was the 20th wedding anniversary for Agnes and me. Naturally, we spent it apart. So, I don't know, I'm going to try to find something nice to do for her for the weekend. Because, you know, really, wedding anniversaries are always a little bit lopsided. There's one side that feels like the other side has to put up with a whole lot more. And I think I'm that person in this 20-year-old marriage. So I need to do something nice for her. Yeah, I did miss National Law Day, May Day. But I'm here now. And you know what? When the program starts this way, it is frustrating to no end because you've got your head in one place with places you want to go, things you want to do, and then the 17th switch doesn't. But we'll be okay. We'll get into the meat of the program, and things will work out nicely, I have no doubt. Where to begin? Note coming in from Kevin. Oh, well, thank you, Kevin. Best I've sounded live in quite some time. That's nice to know. Might have something to do with some of the equipment that's been installed. Maybe it's better equipment. Thanks, Kevin. Much appreciated. Dr. John noting, excellent news from Rhode Island. Props to Lincoln Chafee, who's been on the right side of this for years, and it cost him. But Rhode Island, in fact, yes, has become the 10th state to make marriage equality a matter of law, to make, you know, the 14th Amendment and thereby the rest of the Constitution and all of the laws of the United States real for a lot of people for whom none of it had. So, yeah, that's happy news to start the program. Now, of course, we missed prayer meeting Wednesday. Well, y'all didn't miss it. I did. I was on the road. No prayer meeting Wednesday yesterday, so there's a prayer meeting Wednesday kind of story in the stack, even though this is thorn in the side Thursday, but I think it also qualifies as a thorn in the side. Of course, there are other stories out there. I'm sure you are horrified, as was I, you know, the story that broke on Tuesday. The 5-year-old little boy down in Kentuckistan, of course, the Commonwealth, who accidentally, the story says, shot and killed his 2-year-old sister. Now, we have these stories, it seems, all the time, and they are never any the less heartbreaking for whether it's the 13th one or the 19th one, but this one has an angle to it. This one has a sickening angle, an even more horrifying angle to it. I can remember back when ours were little ones. I remember 1 year when she was really tiny. Margie wanted baby tumbles. And Ferg has never gotten the four-wheeler. There were various and sundry things at Christmas time. And, you know, we would bust our humps to get them. And maybe it's just because of the way we run this family or who we don't run with. that I am unacquainted with apparently an American tradition of giving real live, honest to Jesus, no kidding, rifle guns to 5-year-olds. Because see, the 5-year-old, usually when one of these stories comes along where the 5-year-old kills someone, a couple of weeks ago it was in Tennessee when the child shot an adult woman. Usually those stories involve the firearm being left out and about and belonging to someone else. And by someone else, I mean an adult. This story, however, has an angle that just... The 5-year-old who killed his 2-year-old sister did so with his own rifle. You know, it's not unusual in the gun-crazy, particularly rural parts of America, for Grandpa to say, I got him a 410 shotgun. You know, on the day his grandson is born, because it's kind of sexist, we are, I got him a 410 shotgun, and we're going to go out and we're going to learn how to use it and handle it proper like when he's old enough. Old enough is now apparently defined as 4. And in the case of this particular story, the firearm that the 5-year-old used to kill his 2-year-old sister, you know, I've said that a couple of times now, and it's still not okay. On levels beyond the fact that it wouldn't be okay anyway. Happened in Cumberland County, Kentucky. A single shot from a .22 caliber rifle killed little 2-year-old Caroline Starks. That was the finding of Cumberland County Coroner Gary L. White. He was interviewed by the Los Angeles Times via phone. He said, most everybody in town, notice most everybody, that's a southernism. He's not saying that there's somebody there in town who's actually happy about it. Most everybody in southern means everybody. Most everybody in town is pretty devastated by this. Pretty devastated. That's another one. Yeah. We like our modifiers. Most everybody in town is pretty devastated by this. Nobody wants to take anybody's guns away, but you got to keep them out of harm's way for the kids. It's a safety issue. Because, see, the .22 was just propped in a corner, and the parents, against whom no charges will be filed, because the NRA would be right there to defend their right to keep a loaded... The parents said they just didn't know. They didn't know there was a bullet in the gun. The parents said that about the gun that had been given as a gift to the 5-year-old boy. Because, see, that's the really, oh, Jesus part of this story. There is a company out there, Keystone Sporting Arms. I'm assuming they're from Pennsylvania, Stan. You know, that part of Pennsylvania that's between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and is, in fact, Alabama. Keystone Sporting Arms has a line of firearms called Cricket, My First Rifle. And they've got a cute little logo of a little green cricket, you know, Jiminy Cricket, only he's armed to the teeth. I guess this cricket doesn't say, let your conscience be your guide. He says, you gotta lead him a little bit. Cricket, My First Rifle, proudly made in the USA. Now, this isn't any Chinese People's Red Army rifle for a 5-year-old. This is an American rifle for a 5-year-old, by Jeebus. My First Rifle. Marketed, as the Cricket website says, especially for youth shooters. Well, sadly, the 5-year-old was a youth shooter. The youth he shot was his 2-year-old baby sister. And you know what? For the little girls, they come in pink. Really, pink rifles, 22s. They come in pink, you know, for the little girls. Because, you know, everything a little girl has is supposed to be pink and blue for boys. Pink. And they've got a show-off gallery page with a lot of little cheerins holding their guns and their targets and wearing their orange vests. Keystone Sporting Arms, the owner of Cricket My First Rifle Company, describes their firearms as being, and this is a quote, ideally sized for children 4 to 10 years old. I take issue with that. I don't think there is a firearm in the world that is ideal in any way, shape, form, or fashion for a child 4 years old. I don't think there are any, I don't know, I don't think there are any firecrackers ideally suited to a child who's 4 years old. I don't think there are any, what's out next from Keystone? Booster seats so your kid can drive a car. Strap these little leg extenders onto them and they'll be able to reach the pedals when they're 3. Sadly, and I will say sadly, I have not found any follow-up news stories in which the president and CEO of Cricket, My First Rifle, was found in a barn having hanged himself. Oh, that's mean of me, isn't it? Yes, it is. But what's more mean, me saying that, hypothetically, or whoever that is, in reality? Anybody want to do the research? Anybody want to find out which hedge fund owns Keystone Sporting Arms? Any bets out there? No, really. What's meaner? Me saying that the head of that company should probably go and relieve the planet of his presence pretty lickety split? Or that person actually sitting in a meeting saying, "What? We're going to have a line of rifles for 4-year-olds? My God, we're going to make the money with that. What we got to do is get the guns into these little children's hands earlier, or else they might grow up and realize that they don't have to live a life of paranoid fear and, It turns out that last month, April is the cruelest month, remember? Yeah, it turns out that last month, 4 people were shot by human beings who only recently figured out how the potty works. 4 shot. Killed. The children. Because you know that Barack Obama, he's going to take our guns away. And when he takes our guns away, how's we ever going to teach our 4-year-olds how to protect freedom, Wolverines? Good God. Isn't this a little bit out of hand? Does a time ever come when we say enough? Now, meanwhile, Cumberland County Coroner Gary L. White apparently took it upon himself to defend the fine folks at Keystone Shooting Arms and their Cricket line of children's firearms. He said, that little Cricket rifle is a single-shot rifle, and it has a child safety. This was just a tragic accident. And, of course, yes, in the news story from the Los Angeles Times is the obligatory paragraph about how it is legal in Kentucky to give a child a rifle as a gift. Nor is it unusual for children to have rifles, often passed down from their parents or from their grandparents. Or maybe it's old multi-great-grandpappy's musket, what he done used to try to hold off the bluebellies during the War of Northern Aggression. It had a child safety. Well, it's meant to be used by a child. That means the child safety can be operated by the child. And I sit and I think about the torrential, tsunami-like waves of grief that must flow over and through this family. How do you grow up? I'm not asking this out of a lack of sympathy. I'm asking this out of an abundance of it. How do you help a five-year-old grow up and say, well, son, you know, the rest of your life is going to be a hell of a lot better. We're just going to start fresh now. And just kind of forget about how we know you didn't mean to. But just forget about how you blew away baby sissy. How do you do that? That's not a rhetorical question. Anybody got any answers? How do you do that? How does this child not grow up a complete wreck? I mean, we had a president once for way too damn long, 8 years as a matter of fact, who, when he was a little boy, had a baby sister named Robin. And his baby sister got leukemia. And it was hell on the whole family. And when the baby sister died, Mommy and Daddy turned him over to the nanny and went out and played a round of golf, Mommy and Daddy did, having just put their 2 or 3 year old in the dirt. And I submit to you that George W. Bush never got over that. Yeah, I don't think you're too far off base, Marty. He said, I guess in this case the kids are white. Otherwise, a black 5-year-old would have to be tried as an adult with the prosecutor seeking the death penalty. Yeah, you just know this is kind of a white people problem, isn't it? Or maybe I'm wrong, but this is the only culture I've grown up in, so to speak. Do black families, Asian families, Latino Hispanic families, do they give firearms to 4-year-olds? I mean, apart from the marketing department of Cricket, My First Rifle, who thinks it's a good idea to give a real live, no kidding, rifle gun? Yeah, it's just a .22. Who thinks it's a good idea to give that to a baby? Be-
because when you come right down to it, although the scale is somewhat different, it's on roughly the same level as giving a baby the nuclear football or a hand grenade. Throw the ball, baby. Throw the ball. Oh, no, don't take the pin out. Oh, you took the pin out. So clever. Children are clever. And they'll figure out things you never wanted them to figure out. I'll never forget one day we were visiting with my dad. It was after my mother had died. We were down in Alabama. And Ferg got away. And, you know, and when you got a bunch of kids, hey, wait, where's fill in kid's name? And we found Ferg, and the outsides of his mouth were kind of baby blue. And we didn't know whether he had eaten a packet of sweetener that had turned him blue or had just eaten one of grandfather's heart medicine pills. Because grandfather wasn't used to having little kids running around the house. Out of an abundance of precaution, away we went to the ER where he had vomiting induced. And yeah, what a day that was. It turned out he'd eaten the sweetener. We were fortunate. Accidents do happen. Grandfathers do forget to put away their medicine when the little people are coming. But explain this to me, please. How Because, I mean, I've owned firearms. I've gotten rid of all of them but one. How does the mind work that gets a child-sized 22 for a child first, okay? We'll just blow right past them because there are people in this country who think that's a good idea. But most of the people who think that's a good idea also think that gun safety is really important. You know, because that's what the NRA harps on. They got their little Eddie Beagle program or whatever it is. And if you see a gun, but how do you forget to check the weapon at the end of the day and make sure that it is absolutely not loaded? How do you not check it four or five times to the point that it becomes something verging on obsessive compulsive behavior? I don't know. Jim with a note says, remember, candy cigarettes, same planned learning behavior. Oh, yes, and bubblegum cigars, too. Or toy machine guns. Yeah. But, you know, we dare not think about making a law saying that it should be illegal to market firearms, real firearms, real 22 caliber single shot firearms to children. Because then that's the camel's nose under the slippery slope. And the next thing you know, you ain't got your freedoms no more. And they're rounding you up and sending you to the Obama FEMA re-education camps where they'll teach you to hate guns and love Kenyan socialism. Yeah. So we have that. That's Kentucky. Let's move a state southward. Tennessee. And Coffee County Commissioner Barry West. There really is a Coffee County, most likely named after General John Coffee, who was an associate, I believe, of Andrew Jackson, wound up with a lot of land in the North Alabama, Southern Tennessee area. Wound up with, that's a short way of saying, helped steal it from the native peoples who were living on it. It turns out that Barry West has a sense of humor. Because he posted a picture on his Facebook page of a man wearing a cowboy hat. Now, we've just talked about, we touched briefly on the idea of gun safety. And even if you take an NRA class, and this much I will say for them, the classes out there, once you get past the ideology and everything, of the simple mechanics of handling a firearm, aren't bad. You know what the first rule is? I think the first rule, always assume a firearm is loaded. Rule two, based upon rule one, never point a firearm at anybody under any circumstance, unless you intend to do them grievous and perhaps mortal harm. So the photograph that was on Coffee County Commissioner Barry West's Facebook page is a photograph staring straight into the business end of a double-barreled shotgun. The person holding it, who is apparently not Barry West, but just some guy wearing a straw cowboy hat with some outdoorsy-looking gear, and he's got his sun-leathered, otherwise pink flesh a-showing his arms, and he's holding that shotgun, and he's staring down betwixt the barrels with one eye closed. And Barry West captioned it, "How to wink at a Muslim." You know, because the fella with looking down the barrel of the shotgun's got one eye closed. How to wink at a Muslim. Gall dang it, that's just funny. No, it isn't. So somebody up there in the lamestream media over to the Tennessean newspaper, which once upon a time was a damn fine newspaper and is now run by the Gannett Company. Gannett, whatever. The Tennessean called him up to get his comments on his picture, and he says, I mean, they wanted to know how it got up there. He said, "No, I did not Twitter this. No, I did not create this picture. Yes, I shared it. So why am I being singled out?" Well, Einstein, let's look back to your answer. You shared it. How to wink at a Muslim. You know, I was just funning. He did take it down. Not necessarily because he thought it was wrong, but because he was getting tired of getting lamestream media questions. Because the lamestream media kept asking questions. The Tullahoma, Tennessee News called. Again, wanting to know just exactly what it was that motivated Coffee County Commissioner Barry West
who don't look nothing like the feller in the photograph, I can tell you. He said he found it on the Facebook and he posted it to his own page because he thought it was humorous. And so the Tullahoma News then asks him, well, you prejudiced against Muslims? Jesus. To which he answered, I'm prejudiced against anyone who's trying to tear down this country. Muslims, Mexicans, anybody. You'll notice he didn't say white folks. If you come into this country illegally or harm us or take away our benefits, I'm against it. Hold on a minute. Take away our benefits? What? Oh, he's been listening to the Beckerhead and probably Alex Jones. And all of that palaver about how the Mexicans is getting all our welfare. Yeah. I mean, I just showed it to somebody else. If you're going to harm this country, I'm not in favor of you. I don't appreciate people to tear down. I don't appreciate people trying to tear down this country. Ain't got nothing against no Muslims per se. I got a $100 bill, says this guy never took Latin. I ain't got nothing against no Muslims per se, but if you're trying to tear down this country, find somewhere else to go. You know, you'd probably be hard-pressed to get him to understand this. But, you know, somebody really should tell Barry West that there are people trying to tear down this country. Really and for true. They're called Republicans. Really. We talked a little bit about things like Head Start on Friday. Let's talk a little bit about Meals on Wheels. That's the modest little program that tries to make sure that senior citizens don't just starve to death. Let's see. Meals on Wheels of Contra Costa County, California is going to be cutting its program by about 13 to 15%. Now, at present, Contra Costa County, California delivers 1,500 meals to older folks who like to eat food. Well, that 1,500 number is going to be cut to 1,300. So that's 200 people per day who don't get to eat. And as of yesterday, out there in Contra Costa County, California, they have frozen enrollment for the Meals on Wheels program, with the exception of those who are deemed to be in the most critical need, who have no other means of getting a daily meal. Interestingly, no one contacted John Hagee for this story so that he could yell, "Starve!" That's one Meals on Wheels program. They are... The problems are not limited to Contra Costa County, California.
How's about Lamar County, Texas? Beginning yesterday, Lamar County Human Resources Council is no longer receiving funding for Meals on Wheels. They're going to run their entire plan as is through May the 31st. Then on June 1st, the cuts come in. We like to call it austerity. Belt tightening, right? There in Lamar County, they've gone scrambling for grants and donations. Good luck with all that. Among other things, these senior outreach programs don't just bring meals to people, they also bring seniors to senior centers where they can have interaction and not live lives of desperate, quiet isolation. Well, that's gone. In what may turn out to be the understatement of the evening, Tantetta Moore, executive director of Lamar County Human Resources Council, said, "Without it, elderly clients will go without food. This will impact their health. It will impact their quality of life." I'd say it will probably impact their ability to be considered alive. Think Progress surveyed these folks. Broome County, New York runs a Meals on Wheels program. They're looking at about $10,000 to $12,000 gone from what was already a relatively meager budget. They were bringing food. And see, when we say that, oh, they're bringing food to 390 seniors every day, well, that's not all that needed. Those systems have already been set up so that there are already people getting cut off because this is, of course, a Christian nation. Starve! They serve 390 seniors every day in Broome County, New York. They're anticipating that they'll be getting rid of their personal care services, things that, well, for instance, they send people into the homes of elderly people to help them with laundry and housekeeping. The money they were paying for that, they say they're going to put into trying to make up the shortfall in the food budget. This isn't robbing Peter to pay Paul. This is robbing Peter, kicking him to the curb, and then stomping on him for a while. And then giving Paul a tax cut. If we assume that Paul is a member of the 1%. They don't know exactly what's going to happen to him in Rapid City, South Dakota, but it ain't going to be good. Rapid City, South Dakota is going to lose something like $25,000 out of their Meals on Wheels program. Even before this, and remember, this is all based on a mathematical error, right? Even before this happened, and by this, I mean the whole idea behind austerity. You've read the story. It's a couple of weeks old. Somebody didn't carry the six. Or the one. Or the two. Not the one. They didn't carry the one. Even before all this started, the Rapid City, South Dakota agency had closed its doors in two rural communities. Because it was deemed there weren't enough participants to warrant the cost. Yeah, I guess that whole, if you've done it under the least of these, you've done it also unto me thing is pretty much Oh, that's passé now, isn't it? Marcia Murray is the director of the program. She said, of closing the low participation centers, it's really too bad because they're in remote areas and they're more food insecure. And it looks like more of those remote areas will be closed as a result of sequestration. Maybe now that the delays have been cut back, we could get some Republican politicians to maybe fly out to Rapid City or Broome County, New York, or Lamar County, Texas, or Contra Costa County, California, and watch some old folks starve! Well, where's the fun in that? They never contributed to their political campaigns anyway. F them, right? Things aren't any sunnier at the Memphis, Tennessee Metropolitan Interfaith Association. They were getting money to get food to senior citizens. Why we can't do this as a function of government, instead of giving the money to religious agencies, is beyond me. But never mind. The interfaith group is getting their budget cut too. Right now, they serve 1,800 meals every weekday. They're looking to trim 5% from their budget in belt tightening. James Seacat is the director in Memphis, and he said, we really can't tighten our belts anymore because there's nothing left to cut, and the belt buckle's already touching our backbones. Well, I put those words in his mouth, but that's the essence of it. There's just not a lot of fat, really, he said. It's really a quadruple whammy for us. With government funding being down, expenses including gas and food costs are up. The population who need our services, of course, is growing, and private donations are either flat or, in some instances, declining. But the need is huge, Think Progress notes. Tennessee is ranked fifth in the nation, fifth for senior hunger. Which brings us back to Coffee County Councilman Barry West, who, of course, lives in Tennessee, and says, I'm prejudiced against anyone who's trying to tear down this country, Muslims, Mexicans, anybody. If you come into this country illegally or harm us or take away benefits, I'm against it. I'm guessing, however, that Second Amendment guarantee and freedom-loving probably NRA member Barry West has not gotten on the phone to the likes of Marsha Blackburn and said, I don't like anybody who takes away our benefits, sister. Get back to work. I don't reckon he's done that, do you? No, the only threat he can see to this country is that somebody who wears different headgear is here. Bear in mind, of course, that in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, they tried to build a little mosque. And you can't swing a run over possum in Tennessee without hitting a church. One mosque ain't going to do it no harm. They sued in court over it, and when that didn't work, somebody tried to burn it to the ground. Now, I don't have much regard for any religion of the organized variety. You know that. But I do kind of have to note that it's pretty serious business inside Islam that one not leave the widows and orphans and old folks to starve. It's one of those things that, having the ability to alleviate suffering and watching widows and orphans and old folks starve is one of those things that gets Allah right wrought. But Barry West doesn't know that. Barry West doesn't know, for instance, that there are Islamic organizations all across this country who feed people who need food every day. No, all he knows is that he knows how to wank at a Muslim. Right down the barrel of right down the center of my trusty double-barreled shotgun. That's right. That's how you wink at one of them. Meanwhile, Zach Mujahideen lives in Tullahoma, Tennessee. And he said, in cases like this, I'd say he was born too late to hate the Japanese. If he were born earlier, he would say the same thing about the Japanese. True. And you don't want to hear the words he probably uses to describe persons of color when he thinks that nobody who would object to those words are anywhere nearby. Now, here's the fun part of the Barry West story. Do you think for one teeny tiny moment, that he isn't going to get reelected? You think that might probably get him some votes in Coffee County, Tennessee? I'm telling you, it will. Drost Kokoye is an American Muslim Advisory Council board member in Tennessee. And said, this may just be a picture to him, but for us it is very threatening. Muslims in Coffee County should not feel safe to walk outside their homes. Well, with all due respect to Ms. Kokoye, Muslims anywhere just about in this entire United States should not feel safe to walk outside their homes. Mr. Mujahideen, that I referenced a couple of minutes ago, I'm sorry, she said, that gun was pointed at me and my family. We know that these lead to discrimination and hate crimes in the Muslim community, and we are very wary of that. I am a second-generation American. My children are third generation. We don't see ourselves as anything but American. An Episcopalian interfaith activist named Daniel Tutt called for West to apologize. I got 5-3 odds against the apology. Don't you? Welcome to America. Sergi, by the way, has written in from Texas. He says, the answer to the question, do black, Asian, and other non-white families give guns to kids that young is actually not completely yes, nor is it no. I know about this topic quite well, actually, as a resident of an inner city. There are some families in which one or both of the baby's parents, usually the father, is a real screwed-up-in-the-head ghetto type, and guns get involved in the life of the kid. These come in three flavors. In the first, they generally don't give the kid the gun. It's actually using the gun as a prop to take a photo of the kid for the internet to impress their screwed-up-in-the-head friends and relatives. When it comes to the second scenario, generally, the screwed-up parent gives a gun to a kid at about 10, and it's usually for the purpose of recruiting their kid to help defend the interests of the parent's street gang. The third scenario simply involves the parents being careless with guns, generally either kept for self-defense or for gang violence, and their kids get to the guns, play with them, and end up shooting someone or some people by accident. So honestly, Bob, it can't be said that gun-related stupidity is only a rural thing. Lots of morons running around our inner cities and suburbs as well. True enough. And I don't disagree. I don't know. Maybe. But like I said, this is the culture I know. Stupid me. You know when you know what I did? You know what I did when Ferg was born? I put a baseball glove in his crib. When Margaret was born, I took her into my arms, and the first thing I ever said to her was, "I'm your daddy, and I love you." And then I said, "And all liability is based upon fault." She was going to be my little lawyer. And with Doodle, I knew she was going to be our last, and I just held her and cried. She was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I guess I'm just not a freedom-loving American, because I was not over... the first thing that came to my mind was not the need to put a godforsaken death instrument in their bed with them. It was an act of faith, Marty, to the extent that I engage in those. I put a left-handed glove, you know, a glove for a left-handed player in his crib, and he turned out to be a lefty. Yeah. I wanted a left-handed pitcher. Still working on that. Sandra is with us at the now that I've filibobstered the hour away. Are you there, Sandra?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I gotcha.
Listen, the only reason why I called is, well, hello, first of all. Hope
Hi.
All is well. But I am calling because of this Plan B situation. Okay, here's the scenario. You know, a 14-year-old, you know, fairly enlightened kid, a 14-year-old girl, okay, you know, she has sex, oh my God, with her 13, 14, or 15-year-old boyfriend. We'll keep that age range so we don't get into some other issues.
Right, sure.
Okay, you know, I mean, she's enlightened for a little 14-year-old. She knows about safe sex. But, oh my goodness, a little accident happens, and this enlightened 14-year-old is like, shit, I don't want to get pregnant. Let me go and get a Plan B pill. Oops, can't do it.
Right, and even...
Okay, and the thing is, if she was 15, she has to have some ID. What 15-year-old has government-issue ID, Bob?
I guess it, well, maybe what, a learner's permit?
Okay, no. What 16-year-old? What 17-year-old?
Sure. No,
what
I get your 18-year-old? Point.
18-year-old?
Yeah.
And why does a woman... Because, I mean, last time I looked, you could roll up anywhere and get a goddamn condom. You could be 10 or 8 and get that motherfucker if you wanted to.
Sure.
Now, there's no reason... Science has said it's as safe as buying aspirin. Why in the world... And as the court told the administration... It needs to be universally accessible.
Well, see, that's the furniture kicking moment for me, Sandra, is the court said it. And obviously the Obama administration Justice Department and Eric Holder have the ability to make judgment calls, you know, witness the way they responded to DOMA, for instance. Made the right decision. They're not going to defend DOMA. But on this... They're going to draw a line in the sand?
Well, I mean, I just think it's just, you know, just there's an element of tyranny involved with this executive branch, but that's another conversation. But my problem is the sort of sickness that this country has with women and their fucking body. Now, a teenage girl, you got 10-year-olds who are have periods now. Now, I'm not advocating that everything be accessible to a 10-year-old, but, you know,
well, no,
let's
I mean,
face it, that's the reality.
Well,
now,
can we have that little comparison and contrast moment here for just a second, Sandra? I mean, I think there's real relevance to this as compared to, you know, what I started the program with. We've got 22 caliber rifles for 5-year-olds and a 15-year-old young woman can't get this pill?
Well, yeah, I mean, no, but it's an outrage because you can walk in and pay the prohibitive price of, I think it's like $60 this shit. It's well overpriced. You pay this money and you take it, follow directions and take it. Wouldn't you rather your daughter be able to take care of this situation right away as opposed to an abortion or carrying a baby to term? I mean, I'm just sort of flabbergasted at this administration, especially when just the other week he was talking about, you know, I'm the president, going to walk hand in hand with you to protect your reproductive rights, you know, a speech he gave to Planned Parenthood.
Right.
I mean, I guess we're all real stupid. I guess, because you must be out of your goddamn mind, because what you're doing right here is putting up one barrier after another, along with if you're some sort of undocumented person and you need it, how you gonna get it? I mean, it goes on and on and on, and it's all about, oh, well, you shouldn't be fucking. I know it sounds crude, but...
Now, the only thing I would say, Sandra, is that this is another one of those operating from a position of fear moments for the administration, because this is safe as aspirin. There is no reason, except for the fact that they're afraid of the right wing and they're afraid of the Republicans and they're afraid of their own shadow, and frankly, there's not a lot of fundraising to be done from 15-year-old girls.
Oh no, exactly. No, but it's just the kind of it's the kind of positioning that, you know, we progressives need to take note of and see how quickly we're sold down the river in a minute. Because this is real shit right here. This is real lives that can be made a lot better if teenagers who are having sex, let's just say this again, they are having sex. So you think of that as a parent, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm not happy about it, but I sure the hell want the young women in my life to be able to get something that's going to take care of a situation that makes a difference between them feeling a bit queasy and going back to school or them being fucking pregnant. Are you crazy?
No.
I'm sorry. I'm just like... Well, I'm apoplectic over this shit because the reality is too weird. You have a technology that has been created that can prevent pregnancy if taken within a 72-hour window. And you're telling me that reproductive age people, women, can't have it, and you have dumbass pharmacists saying to men, you can't have it? You know that? That's what goes on?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember the story.
Yeah, and they say, oh, no, you're not allowed to buy it. Say what?
Yeah. Remember the excuse, Sandra? He might be a child rapist and give it to a little girl.
Yeah. Well, no, but I thought that the girl's body can take care of that kind of stuff. I mean, which one is it? No, I
round and round the chicken coop, you know.
Yeah, it's just, but the thing is, it's really disturbing because, you know, just what's wrong with this country? Because this plan B has been, I mean, this is going on near a decade and a half of trying to get this shit made available. Do you realize this?
Yes, I do.
God. And now it's still not available. Because the Obama administration said, oh, this is a compromise. Are you sick of their compromises yet?
It's a compromise in the embarrassing thing that you wish you hadn't been caught doing meaning of compromise.
Well,
I agree with that 100%.
And I'm so, and I feel ill when anytime he like is throwing up his daughters in this discussion too, because you know what?
Yeah, you caught the tattoo remarks or the piercing remarks.
Yeah, that was equally icky. Okay, but it's icky because we know they'd be at getting that plan B as fast as you can run away.
Well, sure,
and
you know what? Mommy and daddy, wealthy mommy and daddy, anybody will do that instead of, because it beats the hell out of an abortion.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not making a judgment about abortion. No, I'm saying that
it's safe.
Cost and simplicity and safety.
How invasive
right.
It is. On and on and on. And that is the key. These people who want to control women cannot abide having a simple way of dealing with unprotected sex. They can't deal with it. And I guess the Obama administration can't either.
Well, I guess that leads to a little moment of speculation because, I mean, can you imagine Michelle being okay with this?
Well, the thing that's even more disturbing is this compromise that they're coming out, but you also know that they're going to challenge, this is on top, they're going to challenge the decision.
Yeah, that's the part that's not driving me crazy, but I find this extremely disingenuous, Sandra. Did you see the administration's excuse for why they feel they have to appeal?
Hit me.
They said they feel like the judge overstepped his authority because he didn't allow them more time for internal review.
Oh, no, there is no. All this just smacks of them catering to the crazy right-wing people, and they're just weak ass because this ain't affecting none of them. Once again, it's not affecting none of them. They'll have access to whatever they need in their risk-free existence. It's all the rest of us who have to be subjected to this madness. I mean, I think this shit's been available in England for everybody since it came on a damn market, I think in the 90s.
France? England? Yeah, places we generally refer to as civilization.
No, but those girls somehow are different, Bob, than our teenage girls. I'm confused. I need to be clarified on that.
Well, I think they probably are. They're considerably better educated, for starters.
Well,
but that's,
I think that the sort of punitive, if you have sex, you have to be punished by being pregnant.
Well, consider that nasty-ass woman that they forced forced children to watch in two high schools in Kanawha County a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And
no,
the young woman who stood up to her, she stood there in front of them and said, if you have sex out of marriage, you will pay.
Yeah, and then this principal's trying to, like, thought he was going to destroy her future. That's the thing that was just over the top. It's like, wait, if what you're doing is so righteous and right, why are you freaking out? That would be my first question to that idiot. I thought what you're doing is so righteous. What's the problem? You know, these people are disgusting. And these young people who step up now and then, you know, I am so impressed because the deck is stacked, you know? Shit.
Oh, there's really deep, deep background stuff with this because, whether it's acknowledging that teenagers have sex or trying to inhibit females in any way that they possibly can, ultimately, this is that ugly, ugly, puritanical streak that runs all the way to the bone in some segments of American culture that says, and it's not just American culture. I mean, it's European culture. It's the culture of the church that says that sex is dirty and
it's wrong, and
it's sinful, and therefore it must be punished.
And women have to bear the brunt of the punishment, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a 3,500. Yeah, I don't want to hear it either. It's a 3,500 year old problem.
Well, no, but I don't want to hear the great black father, saying that we need to I have to have permission, because he has daughters. Somehow that gives him, I don't even know what the hell he's talking about when he's making comments like that. It's like, well, no, maybe your daughters can talk to you about everything, but the predation visited on kids in this society, give me an effing break. You need all the access to help and solutions as you can get as a young person in society, because there is no support. This isn't Spain, you know, where they love their kids.
No.
And I'm not saying that we don't love our kids here, but I'd be goddamn, there is no support in this country if your family is fucked up, okay?
Oh, no. I mean, I think you and I had a conversation, what was it, about a year ago, where I mentioned that great line from the Anna Karenina about all happy families are happy in the same way, but unhappy families are all differently unhappy. If you're part of the unhappy family group in this country, cancel Christmas. They ain't nothing for you here. They ain't no help. You know, and don't get old. Because they're going.
Well, it's you know, and so when I and then so when we get a situation where everything is laid out, you know, technology meets progressive public policy, you're like, yippee. But then we get this Democrat who's going to throw a spanner in it? Please, 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 please. I'm so over it. It makes me feel sick.
Oh,
you know, I mean, I'm like, what the hell? Just because it's not based in reality, you know? I mean, yes, if you're a reasonable adult and you can influence a young person, by all means, try to drive them into the right direction. Great. More power to you. But this sort of pretending that a parental figure is there for every child, give me a break.
No. I think there's an ascent. I don't know how it gets to be that way. We're talking about a man who was raised by his grandparents for all intents and purposes.
It's magical thinking. And, you know, whatever situation he has, great. But not being able to project outside of that is, you know, lack of empathy, it's narcissistic. You know, there's a whole host of signifiers for that madness. And I'm kind of like, I mean, it's shocking.
It is. But what part of this country isn't shocking anymore?
I know. I just, you know, that just sort of, you know, pissed me off beyond belief, because the judge told them to stop, and they're saying, no, we won't. We're going to do it like this. Completely sidestepping the court order.
What does that mean? We need more than 30 days for more internal review.
No, you don't. We've had endless, a mountain of scientific evidence to say that this is a safe means for contraception. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you just got a big amen note in from Beth in Texas. She said, Sandra nailed him. Beth said, for some good while now, I've been calling him president as the father of two daughters, Obama, because after the second time I heard him say it, I've noticed that he drags that phrase into virtually every presidential pronouncement on the subject of women's reproductive health. As for Mama Michelle, I have yet to hear her make a single pro-choice pronouncement in public. If someone can cite one for me, I will be most relieved to stand corrected.
She's a single parent? Remember that?
Oh!
Well, no, listen. I mean, you know, I mean, me and Isaac, we have a theory that all is not well in the Obama household. Because how's she going to slip up like that? I'm like, that's right up there with Condoleezza Rice. That's my husband.
My husband, yeah.
That's right up there with that kind of slip. When I heard that, I said, oh, he better go back on a golf trip with Tiger. What's happening? Anyway, listen, let me get off of fucking Obama, but I'm just sort of, you know, I need for girls to be able to roll up and get that plan B, because that's a nice way out. Yeah, I said it, you know.
Yeah, it is.
It's safe. Want to take care of it.
I want to be able to go get it, but I also want people to be out there to be able to tell them they can go get it.
They can go get it, and, you know, and I can have three or four of them sitting in my medicine cabinet, too. I don't know what the, like, expiration date, but no, I'm not, you know, I don't, I have no problems with that bullshit. And any young woman in my orbit who's in trouble, come to Sandra.
Yeah.
I'll be happy to help
go
you
see,
out.
Go see Auntie Sandra.
No, because it's just BS, you know?
Yeah, it is. Well, it is on so many levels. You know, the judicial level here, the reason that phrase that we need, they didn't give us enough time for internal review, that's like saying how many divisions does the Pope command?
Oh, no. That's funny.
You know, because no. it's like, you know, we're going to drag our heels. No, okay, so he didn't get, what would it, because it begs the question, Sandra, what would sufficient time for internal review be?
January
2017.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but we know, we can, you know, there's groups, they're challenging it, they will challenge this, so... more power to them, and yeah, I don't know what organization it is, but I might have to send them $20 because this is just madness, you know.
Well, I've got a couple of reactions here. Let's see. President not sure just got on the bad side of a lot of people. Susanna Baruch from interim president and CEO of the Reproductive Health Technologies Project. She's pissed. So's Nancy Northrup, president and CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights. Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood. Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women. And Elise Hogue, president of NARAL Pro-Choice America. They are all, I mean, I think Barack is off of their Christmas card list.
That's a binder full of...
That's a binder full of women, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, listen, somebody said something I read on the Twitter. They said a binder full of bundlers. That's what Obama does when he picks his people. He has a binder full of bundlers.
Yeah,
don't you just love the
new... Did you happen to notice who's going to be Printer? The new head of the FCC?
Well, what about the Pritzker? Who's going to be the commerce person who boiled her workers who were going on strike? You know that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we got some evil people coming up. She's horrible. Well, I mean, she's absolutely horrific.
Well, I mean, I was thinking that, I'm focused, I pay attention to FCC stuff, but, you know, I just thought, grab your internets and hang on tight, because this guy's a lobbyist for the cable, a former lobbyist the cable companies and wireless companies.
I mean, he worked for both sides that isn't our side, and it's kind of like, once again, I'm not facing election. And when he's not facing an election, it becomes even more corporatist, not less.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's why I was laughing when he was talking about that $100 million that Adelson could have pointed his way. I know he's making a joke, but I was like, that's telling me a lot. You know, at that dinner he had?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean... You know, that was pretty obnoxious, but the only joke he said that I have to give him credit for was the, you people want me to, you know, reach out and have a drink with Mitch McConnell? You have a drink with Mitch McConnell! I was rolling. That was the best line I've ever heard come out of Obama's mouth.
And that, you know, the Kentucky folks are proud of the bourbon and stuff. And that had, I gotta think, that stung a little.
Oh, shit. No, I thought that was really well delivered, too. He was like, you have a drink with Miss McConnell. That was very funny on his part. But, the sort of, reverse blackface with the Daniel Day-Lewis stuff, that was deep. That was deep. I'm like, ooh, shit. Only a black president can come up with shit like that. I was like, wow. It was like reverse cork, man. Black cork shit. I was like, whoa. I know the listeners don't know what I'm talking about.
No. Well, then expand on it, for heaven's sakes.
No. Listen, I gotta go. But, basically, it was Obama playing, it was Daniel Day-Lewis playing Obama the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just, you know, just has a, you know, a bit of a reverse, you know, history of sort of blackface, in action. That's
right.
It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of like working whiteface.
Yeah, it was just, you know, but anyway, he should, when he finished the presidency, he should fucking do the Tonight Show and call it a day. He's quite good.
Well, when you're the president doing that, I guess theoretically you've got some of the best comedy writers in the world. Or maybe this is just the stuff they sit around, you know, waiting for the cabinet meetings to start.
He did win that, was it an international or national award for advertising for the campaign?
True.
Which people never met. I always find that really strange and, you know, Edward Bernays-like that he won that award. You know? And
yep.
Anyway, I don't know. You know, of course, Obama's a bit of a enigma, but it's not working too well for us progressives, though. That's
no,
the thing.
What we're finding out, Sandra, is that he is a very good campaigner, and it doesn't go much further than that.
Yeah, but it does, because it's detrimental. He keeps appointing these really scary people to really important positions, and why can't he come up with a plan to take care of his judgeship problems? I mean, that is really disturbing.
Well, and what's going to happen when we get President Jeb Bush in 2016 is that judge problem is going to go away, and they're all going to be little, you know, former Shining Path ex-Maoist, now hardcore right-wing GOP judges. And
well, you know, I was also listening to what you were saying about the, you know, I mean, the sequester stuff is really, that's some deceitful governance. I have never seen anything like this, Bob. I mean, this is government, like, preying on the citizenry. What else can you call it?
I call it the complete failure of government. I mean, at this point, nobody expects me to be Mr. Sunshine or anything.
This is government,
if we're not already there, I don't know what it's going to take to get us there. We're a failed state.
Well, I mean, but it's a failure of governance, but at the same time, I look at this article saying that a third of the people are prepared to overthrow and, you know, have you seen
44%
that?
44% of Republicans are ready to go water the tree of liberty. With some natural manure.
So, you know, I mean, and all that sort of clashes together, and it's just hideous because they've effectively come up with a line item type veto situation, and they're, next up, mark my words, Obama will be signing some bill to mitigate or eliminate these defense cuts. And all that's going to be sequestered and are the programs for the people.
Yeah, well, isn't that what the FAA thing was? That wasn't that just a test case to see if we could get them to get everybody together to fix one of the problems? And now we're going to go fix the Pentagon.
Right, that's the thing, and it's just, you know, it's a horror show unfolding for any of us who, you know, view government as a vehicle to empower and help people. It's sad to watch. I feel really kind of sick looking at it.
Well, it's gonna get sicker if it's actually covered, Sandra, because I mean that story out of Contra Costa County. So 200 old people are going to stop getting food. I mean that's terminal, Sandra.
I mean,
200 dead people.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
that's somebody's granny.
Certain quarters said that these cuts would cause death, you know, but they're never listened to. And the people who are dying don't have any sort of lobbyists, so fuck them.
Right, feed them fish heads.
And they've atomized our culture so much that no one sees what's going on. They don't care. It's not part of their information silo or Twitter feed, I guess.
So what? Do we have to, you know, those glitzy LED screen electronic billboards, do we have to put up one of those with a live feed of Granny starving to death? I mean,
we got
hunger strikes going on at the concentration camp in Guantanamo.
Well, which is why you saw Obama pop up. He wasn't doing it out of the goodness. He's freaking out because it's completely...
They're going to die on his watch.
It's out of control. And, you know, I mean, Bobby, it took a few years later. When Bobby Sands croaked, that was a game changer.
Yeah, and Maggie Thatcher had to wear that.
Exactly. And he died, but that really changed up a lot of stuff in the Troubles. And I don't know who's going to disagree with me on that. So, this stuff in Gitmo, you know, when they start dying, I mean, it's a problem. It's a problem for Obama.
Well, and how? And I guess this is more of a medical question than anything, but how long can you force feed somebody with a nasogastric tube, pump an Ensure into their bellies, and they still stay alive?
Yeah, I don't. I mean,
does the human body have a way of shutting that thing down too?
I just think that it's torture, and it's interesting that it's kind of exploded, you know, in the media, hence him rolling out talking about it, because I guess these 100 plus people deciding not to eat is doing the job, because I don't think too many people are aware that the vast majority of those men are free to go.
Yeah.
There's no reason for them to. It was a mistake. They've been acknowledged as being
right,
there.
At this point in time, it's a concentration camp.
Right. And so, I'm not buying that, oh, my hands are tied, Congress needs to step in, blah, 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 because, the chain of command in the U.S. government is so effed up right now, they can do whatever they want to do.
Pretty much.
And it's sort of all of a sudden my hands are tied. Anyway, that Gitmo situation is a mess. And the only other thing I want to mention before I go is, I'm sorry, but they unlocked up this MF-er in Bangladesh, froze his assets, and people riding in the street, you know, braying for blood. Do you know who owns the company in West Texas?
Somebody who is not in chains.
Okay, but I mean, the comparisons are just crazy. It's like, wait a minute, that town was laid to waste. 11 people are dead. Who knows how many people are missing? They broke Homeland Security laws. Yet and still, we don't hear nothing about it. No one's locked up. It's like, oh well.
Yeah, isn't there something in? No, I was asking myself the very same question. Isn't there something in that would be chargeable, or do we have to wait for the grand jury to meet?
I don't know what the hell is going on, but anyway, I mean, I don't know. I just am sort of, it's just kind of awe inspiring that the same kind of industrial malfeasance can go on here. And we're supposed to just accept it, with no questions about that they can zone an effective bomb next to schools.
Well, to schools, to a nursing home, for Christ's sakes, to neighborhoods.
And that's Ayn Randian fantasy world where government plays no part, not even zoning. And that's Texas. And that's a place where,
and Rick Perry needs to wear that.
Well, someone need to tell me why this fucker is still governor after 20 years. I mean, I know it's not 20 years, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, how many years ago did... I mean, Molly Ivins is the one who named him Rick Goodhair Perry.
Yeah, 13, he was governor after W. So we're on his 13th year now. And it's like, I know they only meet every 2 years, but... Go away. When's their election? What's happening?
Yeah, go back to that preciously named ranch of yours.
Oh, man. I mean, I feel for the people in Texas because I read there's like 140 of those plants over that state.
140.
Something crazy like that.
Well, I know the one they were really worried about wasn't that one. Now, what does that say?
Anyway.
Well, you did. You got a note in from Kevin in Colorado Springs. He said, "Tell Sandra I said much thanks to her for putting voice to the point that if your family's fucked up, there's no help." Bingo. An extraordinary amount of truth of that statement at so many different levels, from my own life to things I've witnessed personally and professionally, and it's just the plain truth. If you're low middle class to poor in this country, there's no real help. Even if you're rich, if you think about it quite frequently, there's no real help for you if you have a real problem. It's just that you and your family have a bit more money to deal with things. At any rate, Sandra put into words what I've been feeling but not yet been able to put into words myself yet.
Well, that's because when you say stuff like that in this country, you know, you're labeled some sort of whinger, or, you know, you're not tough enough, or, you know, we all have to be independent. My liberty. That's all I'm supposed to be saying.
And see, I was ruined at an early age because I heard that, you know, that classic line, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. And that seems to be becoming sort of a mantra these days. You know, granny's free to starve.
Well, I was just, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, I went to public school in the golden era of California public education. You know, brace yourself, driver's education was just part of the high school experience, Bob.
Yeah, well, I forget who I was told that. We had, in little old, you know, you went, golden age of California education. I guess there was a golden age of Alabama education. We not only had driver's ed, Sandra, we had a thing called a driving range, and it wasn't at a golf course. It was a big asphalted area, like a parking lot, but with no light poles, and it was all marked off in lanes and parking spaces and places to parallel park.
Oh, yeah, we had the same setup, but, I mean, that is, like, unimaginable now as we pay $50 a year for some music lessons in the elementary school. So,
oh, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You should see the roads I drive on. You know, they turn kids loose with learner's permits in so-called driver's ed out here on U.S. Route 60, two-lane highways, with coal trucks coming at them. And I guess it's just what is this, some sort of trial by combat, baptism by fire?
The point I'm trying to make, though, is it wasn't, you know, there used to be, even in this country, just a bit more state support. I mean, after the Reagan revolution or dystopia, whatever you want to call it, I mean, everything just evaporated to the point where if your public organization messes up slightly, it's going to be privatized, and that's it.
Well, this is a triumph. This is a triumph of the idea that government is bad. This is the mm-hmm. wholesale rejection. You know, once we get past the wrong things they thought, and any good ideas that the framers had, this is the rejection of all of them.
Well, which gets back to what I started out with. You have a public policy that can be executed painlessly, still being muddled. And, you know, listen, I got to go, so I'll just leave you at that, and have a good evening.
Hey, you too, Sandra. It's awful good talking to you.
All right. Bye.
Sandra calling from California on the Skype line. The Skype line, as well as the regular phone lines, are both open. The Skype line, of course, is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And you know the regular phone numbers. There's a lot of them, but all you need to know is one number. 304-658-3333. Patty writing in says, I'm following alerts on the Guantanamo situation. It's really effed up. We did the lesser of two evils is still evil thing here, and this is the only one teeny tiny piece of our effed now. I just hope the 34% of the morons remember a damned lot of us lefties have shooting guns too. You know, just saying. The article Patty sent along, headline, Guantanamo Bay hunger strike, 60 days in, the situation is growing increasingly dangerous. The author of the piece, Aubrey Bloomfield, says, I don't want these individuals to die, Obama said, but how long can the hunger strikers be expected to survive? And this kind of answers the question that I asked of Sandra a few minutes ago. According to physiologists, 60 days is considered the rule of thumb for how long someone can survive, although this varies according to the individual's body fat and striking strategy. Even fasting for 3 to 5 days is dangerous, as the body starts breaking down fat to produce energy. Breaking down fat rather than glucose, the liver then starts to produce toxic byproducts. It's all downhill after week 3, or whenever weight loss exceeds 18% of the starting weight. The body tries to compensate by slowing down its metabolism, entering a starvation mode. Still, once fat stores are entirely depleted, the body has no choice but to mine the muscles and vital organs for energy. The striker simply wastes away as his body, quite literally, consumes itself. Earlier this month, the New York Times published an op-ed by Guantanamo detainee Samir Naji Al-Hassan Mokbel entitled "Guantanamo Gitmo is Killing Me." He recounts the harrowing ordeal of his fast, which has been taking place since February 10th, and which had already caused him to lose well over 30 pounds by the time the article was published on April 14th. The situation was desperate, he said, and people are fainting with exhaustion every day. Remember, this is just subtropical Cuba. Or tropical Cuba. Out of a total of 100 hunger strikers, there are currently 4 who are hospitalized and 23 who are being force-fed. Both the International Committee of the Red Cross and the American Medical Association have denounced the force feeding because somewhere in the halls and deliberations of the civilized, there has been a determination via the World Medical Association that a fasting prisoner, quote, shall not be fed artificially, unquote. Well, stuffing an NG tube up the nose and down the gullet and pumping in Ensure is about as artificial as you can get. And yeah, Bobby Sands, to whom Sandra referred, he lasted 66 days and then died. By comparison, Gandhi, his longest fast was 21 days, at which point the entirety of the Indian people were begging him to eat. And Cesar Chavez, at one point, fasted for 36 days. See, this is a problem. And part of the problem is that we do not acknowledge Guantanamo Bay for what it is. I think, as far as broadcast is concerned, God, it was 2005, no later than 2006, when I started referring to Guantanamo Bay as a concentration camp. Not out of any political agenda, not out of any desire to make the situation sound worse than it is, but merely because that is what Guantanamo Bay is. When you have a prison population entirely of one ethnicity or one religion who are there without any, in many cases, perhaps a majority of cases at this point in time, without being guilty of anything. That's why Guantanamo Bay is Guantanamo Bay. Had any of these prisoners had a foot on so-called American soil, they would have had access to the courts. Does your memory extend far enough back to remember when the Congress of the United States and the Bush administration put paid to the idea of habeas corpus? From the letter in the New York Times by Samir Naji Al-Hassan Mokbel, he said, I've been detained at Guantanamo for 11 years and 3 months. I've never been charged with any crime. I have never received a trial. I could have been home years ago. No one seriously thinks I'm a threat. but still I'm here. Years ago, the military said I was a guard for Osama bin Laden, but this was nonsense, like something out of the American movies I used to watch. They don't even seem to believe it anymore, but they don't seem to care how long I sit here either. When I was at home in Yemen in 2000, a childhood friend told me that in Afghanistan I could do better than the $50 a month I earned in a factory and support my family. I'd never really traveled and knew nothing about Afghanistan, but I gave it a try. I was wrong to trust him. There was no work. I wanted to leave, but had no money to fly home. After the American invasion of 2001, I fled to Pakistan like everyone else. The Pakistanis arrested me when I asked to see someone from the Yemeni embassy. I was then sent to Kandahar and put on the first plane to Gitmo. Last month, on March 15th, I was sick in the prison hospital and refused to be fed. A team from the ERF, the Extreme Reaction Force, a squad of 8 military police officers in riot gear burst in. They tied my hands and feet to the bed. They forcibly inserted an IV into my hand. I spent 26 hours in this state, tied to the bed. During this time, I was not permitted to go to the toilet. They inserted a catheter, which was painful, degrading, and unnecessary. I was not even permitted to pray. Not that the praying would have done you any good, buddy, but no, that's still wrong. I'll never forget the first time they passed the feeding tube up my nose. I can't describe how painful it is to be force-fed this way. As it was thrust in, it made me feel like throwing up. I wanted to vomit, but I couldn't. There was agony in my chest, throat, and stomach. I had never experienced such pain before. I would not wish this cruel punishment upon anyone. Hey, John McCain, we don't torture. Everybody who thinks we don't torture, raise your hand. You too, John McCain. Oh, sorry, you can't because you were tortured. But we don't torture. See, if we really did buy into this religion malarkey that most of this country purports to believe in, we would be on our knees praying, begging whatever God it was that we believed in to please forgive us and not squash us like a goddamned bug for what we're doing. This was published in the New York Times. They read that in Saudi Arabia. Hell, they read it in Afghanistan. They read it in a lot of places where people with long memories will tell their children, and their children will tell their children, and their children will tell their children, God knows how far down the centuries, until one day an opportunity for retribution it presents itself, and that retribution will be terrible, and the vengeance will be awful. And someone who had nothing to do with any of this will pay. Just as we are extracting our bloodlust upon people who had nothing to do with the events of September 11th, 2001. The writer says, during one forced feeding, the nurse pushed the tube about 18 inches into my stomach, hurting me more than usual because she was doing things so hastily. I called the interpreter to ask the doctor if the procedure was being done correctly or not. It was so painful that I begged them to stop feeding me. The nurse refused to stop feeding me. As they were finishing, some of the food spilled on my clothes. I asked them to change my clothes, but the guard refused to allow me to hold on to this last shred of my dignity. When they come to force me into the chair, if I refuse to be tied up, they call the ERF team. So I have a choice. Either I can exercise my right to protest my detention and be beaten up, or I can submit to painful force feeding. You tell me who this sounds like. You tell me if this is the conduct of a nation that believes in freedom and liberty. Bullshit. The only reason I'm still here is that President Obama refuses to send any detainees back to Yemen. This makes no sense. I am a human being, not a passport, and I deserve to be treated like one. I do not want to die here. But until President Obama and Yemen's president do something, that is what I risk every day. There is no end in sight to our imprisonment. Denying ourselves food and risking death every day is the choice we have made. I just hope that because of the pain we are suffering, the eyes of the world will once again look to Guantanamo before it is too late. Is it just me, or if this was another country, would someone have sent a rescue mission in after these poor souls? Marty asks, remember Sicko, the movie, when some Congress critter complained on the floor of the House just how good the prisoners had it in Guantanamo? Yes, I do, Marty, I do. Randy says, when they used to do that in the Soviet Union, we called it unbelievably cruel. If you do it in the United States, it's called cruel and unusual punishment. Jesus. Now, I just saw a news alert coming from the New York Times while I was talking with Sandra, all about how apparently Chokar Tsarnaev is singing like a bird about what he and his brother's plans were. They were going to do their bombing on the 4th of July, but they decided instead to go with the Boston Marathon because they got done building their bombs earlier than they expected. Now, that's going to be a great palaver in the for-profit media. But can I ask a question? Who's telling the New York Times this stuff? Why is the information of the interrogation... Well, on the one hand, okay, great. Open, transparent, maybe. But remember, we've got actual sworn members of Congress who want that young man to be treated like the people who didn't do anything at all and stuffed into Guantanamo Bay, into our concentration camp there. Because, frankly, they want to torture him a little bit. I mean, really? Don't you think there's a nasty, nasty urge for vengeance when you hear something? Oh, I want to have him treated like an enemy combatant. I'm not saying this by any as any sort of exoneration, but is it really that hard to remember the fact that he's an American citizen? A really and for true American citizen? I know we worry about a lot of things, but that scares the bejesus out of me when I hear a John McCain or a precious Lindsey Graham cracker. Hollering about how they want an American citizen held as an enemy combatant. That really is the hand tipper. That's the big tell, isn't it? There aren't any Obama re-education camps. But by God, apparently Lindsey Graham and John McCain and their ilk would like for there to be some McCain-Graham re-education. Ah, screw educating them. We just want to torture them some. And sweet Jesus, there's going to be hell to pay. But naturally, the next time something blows up or limbs go flying, we'll be shocked. Shocked. If we can even get people to acknowledge that what happened happened. I give you. Well, I don't give you, but, well, you know what I mean. Let's meet New Hampshire State Representative Sheila Tremblay. No, I'm sorry, Stella Tremblay. Stella! Stella Tremblay. Now, she says, she's been saying, remember how much fun we had the other night with Badandi. Stop that! The goober from InfoWars. Well, apparently, it's getting some traction, the idea that this is all made up. There's a guy named Pete Santilli, and he had Stella Tremblay on his radio show. Enjoy. This guy's an Alex Jones wannabe.
It's no longer that. But let's go back to what has brought you into the public light and what brings you on the show today. You wrote that the Boston Marathon attack on April 15th was carried out by quote-unquote black ops. And let me read your quote here. The Boston Marathon was a black ops terrorist attack. And Ms. Tremblay wrote in a message to conservative commentator Glenn Beck, "One suspect killed, the other one will be two before they even have a chance to speak. Drones and now terrorist attacks by our own government. Sad day, but a wake-up to all of us. First there was a suspect, then there wasn't. What a bunch of Keystone Cops." What caused you to come out the way you did? And I've come out in similar length, but go ahead.
I cannot take credit. One of the constituents sent me an email. Says
she can't take credit. She can't take credit. She also can't form a rational thought, but who's counting?
Have you seen this on Black Ops? And I was directed to Sergeant Major Potter, is it?
Lieutenant
and
Colonel Potter,
yes. And when I listened to him, I saw his face. He looked like he knew what he was saying, that he had a conviction, that he was honest.
A conviction or a commitment? We're not sure here. I think butterfly nets were involved.
And he said, don't believe everything in the news. I was never aware of black ops before. I mean, I was in Venezuela and cried my heart out when I watched 9/11. Mm. And I couldn't believe this was happening. And I swallowed everything that was told me because most Americans want free, you know.
Was that an ice cube clinking in a glass there? Just checking.
I guess you have to get off, huh?
No. Oh, no. Not at all.
I know that.
Will somebody buy this goober a mic mute? No, not at all.
Most Americans want freedom. They want to live and let live.
Does that include not starving grannies to death? I just want to know, Stella. Stella Tremblay. You know what? You know what we need? Motivation. I was just over there on the Brando set, and they're just swimming in it. Stella!
And the government is there basically to make sure the protection of that freedom is there. That's all the government has to do.
Yeah. And if granny starves, F her. And if little kids don't have Head Start, F them too. Jesus Christ. And you know, if fertilizer plants rocket toward the moon and take the nursing home with it, freedom!
When I was, then he asked, go to InfoWars. Then I went to InfoWars.
And there we have it. Stellar, Thoughts, Bob? Not everything on the internet is true. I know it may be hard to comprehend. I get the idea that tying your shoelaces is probably hard to comprehend, but no, not everything on the internet is true, and almost everything at InfoWars is not true. But do please continue.
InfoWars, and I started opening my eyes, and I thought, you know, Alex Jones, everyone says he's crazy.
Only because he is.
But perhaps there's some truth to this. And the more,
no, perhaps not.
The more I looked at it, in my heart, something told me there's something wrong here.
Something in your heart told you there's something wrong here. Well, stellar, the here that there's something wrong at. It's your brain. I guess nobody ever told you, but you've got a broken brain. And so apparently do a number of people in New Hampshire who have elected this person to the New Hampshire state legislature not once but twice. She likes this kind of stuff, though, because if you wander around in the really, really rich and fertile ground of weirdo, right-wing, separatist, part of the internet, you'll find another thing that they really love is this constitutional amendment that never passed that says that no member of government may accept a title of nobility. And they argue that Esquire, which is something that you hang behind a lawyer's name, is a title of nobility, and therefore that no lawyer should be allowed to be in the government. She introduced that in the State House of New Hampshire, but are we surprised?
Wow.
You just have to...
Wow, yeah, that's what I say too, Santilli.
Look at that backpack, and you can see if there's an explosion, the backpack is blown to smithereens. There's no...
Physics? She's a physicist now? The backpack is blown to smithereens. That's a scientific term, smithereen.
Nothing left. Mm-hmm. What was it doing just laying there? Then my first gut reaction seeing the horror of...
Oh, here comes the payoff pitch. 3-2, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, and here's the payoff pitch. All the runners are going.
That person that had their legs blown off, you know, with the bones sticking out?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
And he was...
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Is blown to smithereens. There's nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
What was it doing just laying there? Then my first gut reaction seeing the horror of that person that had their legs blown off, you know, with the bones sticking out?
Yes, ma'am.
And he was not in shock, and I looked...
Because you can diagnose that from a photograph. See, we have a problem in the right wing in America, because they like to diagnose things based on videos and photographs. Remember how they diagnosed Terry Schiavo? This is that.
And I thought, there's something, I don't know what's wrong, but it seems surreal to me. Mm-hmm. I talked to my sister, who's not into politics at all, and she said, yeah, I saw the same thing. He was not in shock. He was not in pain. If I had had those type of injuries, I'd be screaming in agony.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot, Mommy. I trust you saw... It ain't easy to look at. I trust you saw the photograph. An instant... That was probably captured, oh, I don't know, probably what, in old camera terms, probably around, oh, F-20, F-22, maybe, a tenth of a second? And she can tell that this person who has just been horribly mangled and is being rushed away in a wheelchair... is just fine with all of it. They're not shocked. She's saying the guy with his legs blown off wasn't real. That's where they are. Wasn't real. It was all staged. Just like in the movies. I don't know. I guess the guy's face was supposed to be sort of elongated, like Munch's scream, and he was supposed to have his hands to his head and go, "My legs are blown off." And as I frequently note in stories like this, there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals who, at some point in time, walked into a voting booth and said, "Yeah, her. Family values. Loves liberty. I'm going to vote for her." Now, it's wrong accent, but you get the idea. I like how she wants to make sure that her Alex Jones wannabe host with the clinking glass and understands the photo she's talking about. "My first gut reaction seeing the horror of that person that had their legs blown off, you know, with the bone sticking out." Now that too is a bit of a tell. It means that she thinks there might be other photographs of people with their legs blown off whose bones were not sticking out. And we don't know if they were reacting appropriately to the standards set forth by Stella Tremblay. Spent a lot of my time. One of the earliest lessons I remember from Mother was that never say you hate someone, because hate is a powerful and destructive emotion that does more harm to the person doing the hating than the person being hated. And I think she was right. But in the case of Stella Tremblay, it really does beg one to think seriously about making an exception. What does she need? This is almost biblical in its proportion. As a means of discrediting the Gospel of Thomas, which was not included in the canonical Gospels, the story of Thomas doubting the resurrection was inserted in the Gospels, in which Thomas says, "I'll not believe he's back up and walking around unless I can see him, touch him." Yeah. And so the resurrected Jesus has him put his hands in his wounds. That was all political. Well, or religious, or however you want to describe it. Like I said, they were busy trying to discredit the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas. But this is that. I guess she needs to be taken to the hospital, where undoubtedly the man is still undergoing treatment. But one wonders even then, for one of these losers. One wonders if that would, well, they just found somebody and stuck him in a, they found somebody with no legs and they stuck him in a hospital bed and they bandaged up his stumps. That don't prove nothing. By the way, Agnes just pointed this out to me. She said, that twit was talking about Black Ops, the game. Colonel Potter? Really? Colonel Potter? Now, see here, honeycut. And go feed my horse. Sorry, Marty. Sometimes we have to understand that they walk among us. Marty asking, do you really have to subject us to this person? And again, this isn't some one-off. There's lots of people who believe, and I use that word deliberately, believe the same crap. And when they become, if not a majority, when they become a plurality, you have what is commonly referred to as a problem. Witness, for instance, the story that Sandra referred to, the survey data. That should be sufficient. And you know, these things come along from time to time. I remember the one where 29% of New Jerseyans surveyed weren't sure whether Barack Obama was the Antichrist. Remember that one? TPM with the story. 29% of people surveyed think that armed rebellion might soon be necessary. And that's not poll 29% of Yemenis, or 29% of Pakistanis, or 29% of Bolivians or Venezuelans. That's 29% of Americans. Roughly 1 in 3. 1/3. That is a frightening, indeed, and a dangerous plurality. It gets more fun, however, because the number for Republicans is 44%. I suppose it's strictly a matter of the operations of the goddess of irony that that's roughly the same number as there are Republicans in the Senate of the United States. An easy third of Republicans surveyed think that the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre is a lie. Beyond that 32% of Republicans, well, taken altogether, 11% said, well, I don't know. I'm unsure. Next time you're in a crowd, unless you're somewhere that you're sure is really, really, really sane. Look around you. Do a little mental thought experiment. Count 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. And either the ones or the twos or the threes, you know what you get to tell yourself? That's somebody who would be willing to kill me. Because rebellion, armed rebellion, might be necessary. Do please remember that on our side, we generally are still hanging on to this notion of self-government. And that we, the people, is the expression we use to describe the fact that we are not subjects, but instead citizens. And that whether it be the ones, the twos, or the threes, they think it may be necessary to take up arms against the government. If the question had been asked by the surveyors a little bit differently, it might have provided a more meaningful or perhaps at least more interesting data set. Do you believe that in the near future it may be necessary for you to commit treason? Because that's what that is. 44% of Republicans surveyed said it may be necessary in the near future to commit treason. Hell, I doubt if the number was that high in 1859. One, two, three. One, two, three. And of those 44%, I would bet you, with money I don't have to bet with, but I'd bet you, because I'd win, that of that 44% of Republicans who have publicly stated, at least to a poll survey taker, that they're willing and ready at some point in the near future to commit treason against we, the people of the United States, I bet you they got lots of guns. And no, this is not the Alex Jones portion of the program, but I'll also remind you, there is an outfit out there called Oath Takers. And they have, in fact, infiltrated the military of the United States. And their oath is that they have sworn that they will never fire on an American citizen. By American citizen, they mean somebody who is shooting at us, at them. No. Just because I said that doesn't mean that there's a Buy Gold Now ad coming. I don't think gold is a hedge against anything for this kind of horror. But at what point in time do we, taking all of this together, Head Start, Meals on Wheels, a crumbling infrastructure, another pipeline burst, this one north of Arkansas in the Ozarks of Missouri, but it's the same goddamn tar sands pipeline. ...44% of the Republican Party ready to engage in treason and launch a civil war. At what point in time, what is the one thing that happens where you suddenly say, oh, hell, they're not kidding? mean, the reason I wasn't on the air Tuesday was because I was exhausted. Ferg and I had spent the entire, well, I'd spent 3 days working on it, and then Tuesday we spent putting it in place. We put our feet into every hall of every floor of every house office building, and we passed out ACE Act flyers to something like in excess of 80 congressional offices. By the time we were done, my feet felt like meat balloons. But along the way, because I was trying to make this an educational experience for my son, I would say, "Woohoo, there's a live one," pointing to an office of, say, Paul Ryan. Or, "Oh my God, crazy lives there," as we walked past Marsha Blackburn's. And the thing is, you don't know how many times I said that. It got to the point that I could just kind of hook a thumb at a door and Ferg would look at me and go, "Nuts?" "Absolutely, son." And finally he looked at me and he said, "There seem to be a lot of those." I said, "Yes, son, I think it's risen to the level of an infestation." And if 44% of the people who vote for the likes of Marsha Blackburn, or John Boehner, or Paul Ryan, or Louis Gohmert, or Michelle Bachmann, are ready to take up arms against the rest of us, and not a damned word has been uttered against this by any single member of the Republican Party whatsoever, what does that tell you about the likelihoods of things going down the road and going down the toilet as they go down the road? Just something I suggest might be worth considering. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Welcome back to the air.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
You sound good and strong, and hopefully you got a day's rest. I everything that I hear from everybody that calls the show, Sandra, yourself, all the same interpretations, and we don't sit around and listen to people that talk like us. So how can people be all different in the United States and come to the exact same interpretations and conclusions and stuff without? So I think it should be an indicator to other people that are listening to us that there is still some sense of, right and wrong or common sense and, something. And then have such a large group of Americans, miss that connection. They are so hyped up on, I know you're not a big fan of Facebook and nor am I, but, And I have gotten a little strong on that thing. I do tell people to, I won't say it over the air, even though I could. But the comment that you made earlier, just a moment ago, about soldiers in the United States and the Oath Keepers, and of course they broke up a plot, which would have failed within moments anyway, but of a group of American soldiers not that long ago, like 2 years ago. Or less at Fort Stewart. And when the plot was getting ready to be exposed, they murdered some of their own soldiers, a guy and his girlfriend. And I think they would be either like Oath Keepers or actually were. So there's some... I think that's one of the things I think when you it's one of the things that when I see these Americans and they show all these stupid... commercials or moments on the news, and you know, a family member's coming back at the airport or bum rushing their kid at a grade school. I'm not impressed with that because I think that's so much propaganda. But One thing, being at my age and having worn the uniform, if you're a United States Marine leaving a Marine Corps base, and bases are called bases because they're not permanent, and forts are called forts because of that status. If you leave a base and you're in a uniform known as your camouflage uniform, Army refers to it as the BDUs, you are not to exit your privately owned vehicle unless there's an absolute emergency. If you do have to exit your vehicle, you have to get out of the vehicle and immediately put what Marines call your cover on. Whatever your headgear is, it's referred to as your cover, whether it's a helmet or a...
Right.
Or, you know, so... And they have everybody so tweaked up in the Corps that, I mean, when you leave a base, it's like 5 o'clock traffic. And there's a lot of people that stay on bases and there's a lot of that come and go. But you have no reason to do that. But what I see now as soldiers, and we've all seen this over the last... actually 15 or 20 years now, people coming back through airports wearing camouflage uniforms. I think that's one place we could immediately stop the militarization of our civilian society.
Oh, every time I'm in an airport, Mark, I see a dozen or more.
It's inappropriate. Actually, if they want to be in uniform and you know, from a security aspect, they make targets out of themselves by wearing them, but I don't want to live in a nation where that becomes the actual issue, though we may already be there. Let's hope not. But that they should be wearing what U.S. Marines call the Charlie uniform, which is your dress slacks, dress shoes, and either a long-sleeve shirt with a tie or your short-sleeve shirt. And
well, the real you know, yeah, you said the Army calls them BDUs. Doesn't that stand for battle dress?
Your battle dress uniform. That's
so that means that on the plane they are dressed for combat imminently.
Yeah, sure. And they wear them in civilian airports. They wear them in on their own. And actually, you know, a lot of the travel is done by civilian airlines anyway, and has been for many years. Even the Flying Tigers were not just associated with the agency, but they were, you know, part of a thing in Vietnam. But if you look at the photographs back during Vietnam, soldiers were wearing what I'm referring to as Charlies, and that's where, and then you wear your ribbons in a conservative fashion, or don't wear them at all. You're not, I don't think you have an obligation to wear your ribbons. You have the opportunity to wear them, but they're considered conservative. It's not a full out. Your medals are what drapes on a dress uniform, and the ribbon is the small representative thereof. And it's out of respect to whatever society you're in, whether you're in the Chinese Army or the Russian Army or American Army, and that's how you transport yourself through. And if you look at our old movies, whether it was Burt Lancaster's, you know, the movie in Hawaii, or even Forrest Gump, he was wearing Charlies when he's, you know, he's running, or if he's out in public, he was in his dress uniform. He actually, in that movie, He dressed appropriately in the uniform. Whoever the consultants were on that, they were very very accurate. That would be one place we could start almost overnight. You could issue an order: do not leave the base. And then what that there's a former Special Forces guy. He's a couple years older than me. He's a Vietnam veteran. I want to say his name is Stan Goff. He's a Vietnam, and he's also a Special Forces Delta, and I think he had something to do with some anti-terrorism stuff. But he is a great web page, and he's an author, and he talks about how our police have become militarized and how our soldiers have become policified.
You know what, Mark? I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. And I'll take it one step further, because when you were talking about how they're encouraged to go out that way, it reminded me of something that I see a lot more of here than I do military stuff. But it is a representation of a form of militarization. Just as background, and I've mentioned it on the show. I've mentioned it on the program before. My grandfather, upon leaving the coal mines, went to the bathhouse, scrubbed all the coal filth off of him, and put on clean clothes to go home. He put on the clothes the wore to work. You know, you'd go to work, change into your work clothes, and then get out of your work clothes and go home. My grandfather would have no sooner walked off the mine site in his coal mining clothing than he would have gone home naked.
Mm-hmm.
Now, however, because we've got a culture where, for instance, women drive around in their car with a silhouette of a man crawling on his knees, and underneath it says, "My husband is my hero. My husband is a coal miner." Okay? Now, they not only come off the job site wearing their filthy ass work clothes, they go to the grocery store in them. A friend of mine who does some DJing in bars in Beckley tells me that they will deliberately dirty themselves up before they go into the bar because it's deemed to be a turn on. And it may not seem similar to you, but it's the same kind of mindset, at least from where I'm standing looking at it.
Actually, it does seem similar to me. I thank you for pointing that out. It's kind of a it's a lack of it's a degradation reflection, and it's really not impressive. Neither observation is impressive. And the sad thing is, I was working down in South Florida at a nuclear power plant when 43 was in the office, and all the coal miners all over the country were starting to get killed all of a sudden. And I was walking with a guy that's been in the union with me for over 30 years. I thank you very much. John, those aren't union guys that are dying. Those are all non-union coal miners, and it's too bad that they're dead, but they're not union. So those are union guys, Mark. I said, no, they're not, John. And he did come to me later when he saw me and said, you know, you were right. I said, they wear stickers and on their hard hats, and it's just, you know, and you also see when you're seeing on the stupid Facebook, everybody, not everybody, the people bring out the fact that gas was a dollar something when the Bush was in there. But, you know, I was in California working in San Onofre, and I went to the gas pump, and of course things are going to be more expensive in your big city, Chicago, your California. But diesel was $4.98, and regular unleaded was it was close to $4 a gallon, and that was in 2000. I was out there in 2005 or six, and I'm like, what? Where are these people? And even the Marines sitting behind me on the bleachers, while thousands of Marines were being processed, being marched into a huge auditorium like Camp Lejeune, which has sway over about 20 to 30,000 Marines, whether they're in coming in from Norfolk or not, or on deployments to the Med. We're going to get our shots, and these Marines sitting behind me on the bleachers, and I'm talking to my buddies who are sitting next to me, and it's a cool day, it's comfortable, it's January. We're called back as citizen soldiers for Desert Storm, and I said, what'd you guys just say? And they said, yeah, you didn't know that? And I said, no, you said the Bush family owns Pennzoil. I go, you're kidding me. And they go, where are you from? And they said, well, one Marine was from, like, New Hampshire, and another one may have been from Connecticut. And I said, I never knew that. I go, you're shitting me. And I go, they go, no. So then, and of course, 15 years later, I read Kevin Phillips' book, American Dynasty. And he's been interviewed, obviously, a few times on C-SPAN, but he looked at the TV one day in one of his interviews, and he said, I helped get them elected with the Southern Strategy, which I think I've mentioned to you before on the show. But Kevin Phillips, who's, you know, in his 80s now, said that family, they scare me. I helped put them in there. He's a, you know, he's an expert on our history and geography and culture. The other thing along the same lines, last night on Rachel Maddow, they had the former United States Army Fulbright Colonel and registered Republican who was the chief of staff for Colin Powell. He was confronted by a guy that's been on the news the last couple of days. Is he a real fast talker? And I think he may be a former soldier. I think his last name is Mudd, M-U-D-D, if I don't have that right or wrong.
I think you're right.
And when you listen to him at a glance, you're thinking, hey, that guy's starting to make a little bit of sense. And then he loses my attention. And then, well, maybe my attention span's not. But this Wilkerson gets on, Bob, and he says, the guy that you just had on was the one that was confronting me right at the United Nations, telling me what to put some words in terrorism into Colin Powell's speech. And he goes, He said, I said, that was bullshit. I'm not going to do it. And actually, the dude dimed him out to George Tenet, who obviously went along with the plan. Wilkerson, a neat man, is really kind of like Wendell Potter has come out with the healthcare industry. The people that were actually a part of the operation saying, no, we're telling you, or Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski with the Office of Special Plans, who she steps out and says, you know, I've done this work for over 20 years as an intelligence analyst, and they're cherry-picking information. But I have to be honest with you. I was coming back from New York. I was just working up there, Bob, a few weeks ago, when a lot of this stuff that's been in the news was unfolding, and it's actually what woke me up. I was working night shift, and my phone lit up my room, and I thought I had turned it off, which I normally want to keep my phone in the off position. The light woke me up, so I picked it up, and it was the bombing in Boston. So I let that unfold, and of course I paid close attention to it, and I thought, well, let me Google my distance where I'm sitting right now, and I think it was like 350 miles to Boston or less. And then a few days later, the arrest in Toronto of the two guys. I'm thinking, well, okay, so they were on that case for a year, and they arrest these two guys, and they could have taken them down at any time. And then I listened on National Public Radio how they were going to bomb a train that crosses the American border into Canada. It must be a sophisticated line or something, which I'm not that familiar with that part of the country. I said, oh, okay, well, that's good. Let me Google that. So that was about 260 miles to my almost not my immediate due northwest of me. I said, well, shit, I'm sitting right in the middle. Well, whatever, man. That's kind of freaky. And the day that I pulled into this power plant, I was talking to my wife on the phone. And this is before any of this transpired, and I made a comment. I said, you know, Chris, out of all the places I've worked in the country, I've worked in Mississippi, I've worked other places in New York, I've worked Massachusetts, I've worked California's all their plants, and Florida's all of her plants. I've worked a lot of places, and this particular place just seems a little vulnerable to me. It just doesn't seem. I said the folks are pretty bright, and they're squared away looking people. They're organized. They've processed the sin well here. I said, but I don't think that they're arrogant. I just don't know if they realize fucking target. So. So that's unfortunate for me with my background, having guarded U.S. embassies, I didn't catch the bomb, but I was being driven from the Marine House in Buenos Aires to the embassy, and we're being driven by usually former Argentinian policemen who are in civilian clothes capacity. You are also in civilian clothes. You do go in like your grandfather into embassy, and you do shower and you put on your uniform. And when you get done after 8, 10, or 12 hours, you take a shower, and you run your ass home, or you catch a ride back to the Marine House. I did both. I would run a lot, and I would take different paths for my own safety. Not that I felt like something was out to get me, not that paranoid, but that's what the Marine Corps had taught me. And that's why I'm speaking to you tonight, because I left that job not out of fear, but a bit of fear, but just out of my instincts and intuitions. I think, well, Mark, if I would have gutted this job out for the cash, then I'd become like the son of a bitches that are running our country into the ground to begin with. So I'm going to choose, like I did when I left the Marine Corps, I'm going to choose to fight for my fellow Americans like yourself, people that have not surrendered on the good-natured aspect of Americans and want to defend our society, our country, our culture, our areas. Which, you know, and I hear a lot of people call the show about mountaintop removal, but and you're very kind when you discuss it, but I know that pollution endangers the whole United States standard of living, and specifically right around in the southeastern part of the United States and in the Middle Eastern states from the methods that they use, and it's very cancerous causing, but that eventually gets into the air, just like I explained to the guys I work with. It does matter what happens between India and Pakistan. It does matter what happens in China, because if some shit gets in the stratosphere, whether it's nuclear or if it's coal pollution from China, that shit lands in Cleveland, Tennessee, and it lands in Cleveland, Ohio. It lands on our nation. It's not good for us. So I try to be...
Oh, that's the absolute truth, Mark. I'm looking at a I'm looking at a story here right now about the fact that Fukushima ain't even anything resembling over yet.
Mm-hmm.
They got a water problem there. I don't know if you've seen this.
No.
But they've got groundwater running into the reactor buildings at about 75 gallons a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then after it's been radioactively contaminated, they pump it out to keep it from destroying the what little cooling system they have for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this radioactive wastewater is then pumped into a series of not exactly what we would call sturdy or reliable wastewater holding tanks that are scattered over the contaminated ground around the plant. And it's a humongous nightmare waiting to happen. And yeah, we do have to pay attention to it. You know, because stuff from Fukushima is washed up on the shores of Alaska. It's washed up in Washington, Oregon, California, Hawaii.
Well, I don't know if you remember when that story broke. There was something that got on the national radar that a nuclear power plant had picked up their radiation here in Florida, and it just so happened to be the one we were working at or had just been at Crystal River, which is not too far from Tampa. But they had a sensitive enough machine there that where they picked up the crap there, and that's, you know, obviously on the other side of our nation. But Bob, how many reactors have melted down there? Is it four now?
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they've got six at that spot, and I think those are what they call BWRs, or boiler water reactors, and those are the exact same size and scope as the BWRs we have here in America. We actually, if any of the listeners are interested, but from what little I saw, we actually...
Well, they're GE built, aren't they?
That sounds about right, but we impose that. We impose that like the Euro. We impose that upon the Europeans to take down, to buy the bad money and then blame it on those social concerns. That way we can privatize their market. But just like we impose these BWRs on the Japanese and the elderly Japanese people, that have notoriety for living so long, had warned the young Japanese society, hey, you know, you need a seawall that will not be breached by over 100 feet because we have a storm that comes every so often that will do that. And that whatever they built there is out of 50 or whatever it was, it obviously didn't work. Everything is interconnected. I want to throw out one thing and get your take on it, and I'll hang up and some other folks can communicate, and then glad you're back on air and glad you're doing good. But I'm beginning to think, Bob, that the Benghazi drum that just won't go away, and then you've got the hearings apparently with the billionaire auto alarm guy, Daryl Issa, the Lebanese shaman from California, very compassionate human being he is. I'm beginning to wonder if it wasn't like what they did to Obama with Honduras after he was in office for a couple weeks. Because we have some... either paramilitary or some right-wing elements that work, either were in our government or still have contacts that are in the government or are a part of it, that are a little bit out of control. And I'm not, again, like yourself, I'm not trying to sound like the knucklehead from Texas, but if you look at the Honduras thing, that president actually was being sympathetic to the worker struggle in Honduras, and Honduras is the microcosm country where the American corporations are literally going in and privatizing their cities where there are county governments. If you jump up to Benghazi, I'm wondering if that effort may not have been coordinated by elements within our own nation. And I'd like to get right of the right wingers and throw that back on them. I also, and I'll get off the line here, but I'll just leave it with the listeners and they will bring up Benghazi, but I would mentioned reinforce the fact they were all veterans. They were not active duty soldiers. It's a job that's traditionally done by the United States Marine Corps, active duty Marines. They've been privatized. They work for a corporation, and the ambassador, I'm not besmirching his sexual nature, He happened to be a homosexual Democrat appointed by the Obama administration. He didn't deserve to get killed for any of those reasons. None of them do. My point is, I just get a kick out of the right-wingers that are so upset about our homosexual Democratic ambassador being killed, and I didn't realize they had that much compassion. I want to thank any Republican listeners for being so caring and caring about people that much, especially a gay man. But he was not in an embassy. He was not in a consulate. And he was just in a goddamn fucking house in a suburb. That's a fact. And an embassy, a consulate, are bunkers that look like houses or they look like office buildings. But having worked in them, it would take a tank to knock them down, and not like the one at Waco. It would take a series of strikes. So
I understand what you're saying, Mark, and I don't think you've gone all Alex Jones on us by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, some of this stuff does feel a little bit tailor-made, and we know that back during the campaign, because I think I spent practically an entire evening talking about it, there was a high-ranking Republican strategy meeting in which they determined that they were going to try to turn Benghazi into a monumental campaign issue. And you know, they might have succeeded had they had any candidate except the one they had. Because, you know, Willard Romney has the human face of a Cylon. I am deeply concerned about Benghazi. It just didn't work.
He just couldn't connect. He just couldn't connect the dots.
No,
couldn't get that. And he jumped on the. You know, they were salivating so much if that was an inside job that he ran out there with the composure of a robot, and not even the Honda robot. The Honda robot probably has a little more finesse and feelings. But he did not translate that story at all, and he jumped on the president within just moments after it. So I think like Republicans, when they probably have sex, they probably shoot their wad a little early too, because they think a lot about sex. They don't have it as much as they probably want to. That would be my guess. It's sad to say, but anyway, Bob.
No, it's not sad to say at all, Mark, because then there'd be more of them.
Well, and
oh well, I'll get hell for that one.
Hey, Bob, there'd be more of them, and thank God for the Dominican police stopping Rush Limbaugh at the airport. But you know, it might drive me back to a religious outlook, knowing that that Rush Limbaugh doesn't have any children. Maybe there is a higher power out there. Anyway, Bob, I'll hang up.
All right, Mark, you have a good night. Take care.
Semper Fi, bro. Ciao.
Bye now. Our buddy Mark calling from parts unknown. And by the way, a big thank you to Jay, who helped out this evening. I haven't mentioned fundraising or anything this evening. And Jay took us a long way toward making tonight's fundraising goal without even me saying a word. So thank you. Anybody else who would like to help us reach our goal this evening is much appreciated. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and the traditional carbon intensive mail address is also there for you as well. Just wrapping up a little bit tonight, since we did start out with the Kentucky Rifles for Tots story. Cricket. It's the cricket. Let's finish up with another something. Well, not. I won't say similar, because I don't. Ugh. I can't stand the thought of anything being similar to that. But there were similarities. Stop. No, we were also in New Hampshire this evening, so we'll go back there. And what I mean is this. Kelly Ayotte is catching hell because her poll numbers are dropping like a paralyzed buzzard. After what she did to the
grieving families of Newtown. She was asked at a town hall meeting in Fitzwilliam, New Hampshire, about why she helped to kill the background check bill. She said, "I know people have strong feelings about this issue." And then went on to say that I thought the focus should be on fixing the current background check system and mental health. And then said that she voted against expanding background checks into gun shows and internet sales, because that's all that little piddle and pissant bill did. Because, and this is the takeaway, because she felt like gun owners would face an undue burden, and she was afraid it would lead to a federal gun registry. Well, A, those are both talking points straight out of the NRA. You know, I drive by NRA headquarters in Virginia, right next to I-66 every time I go into or drive out of Washington, D.C. And I can't look at that building now without... You remember the Ghostbusters movies? And how the slime just... when it gets out of hand, it gets all over everything. Well, sort of cross that with that unforgettable scene from the movie Carrie. I can't drive by the NRA headquarters without seeing it just dripping with a waterfall of a bloodfall of human blood just running down the walls. And, of course, they're the ones who go, "Oh, create a gun registry." We certainly can't have that. Now, granted, we have a registry of people who operate motor vehicles, and a registry of people who have fishing licenses, and, in fact, a registry of people who have been born, and even a registry of people who've died. But we cannot have a registry of people who buy guns. But never mind, because the little pissant compromise bill didn't create one in the first place. But the part that sent me around the bend, so to speak, was that line about how making a person at a gun show pass a background check, or making a person buying a firearm online pass a background check, would create an undue burden on gun owners. That ran through me like a dose of salts. An undue burden. I have no idea what Kelly Ayotte sees when she looks in the mirror in the mornings. But I see a photograph of her after reading that, and I see nothing but a monster. An undue burden. What do you call it when you dress your 5-year-old little daughter for school? And it's winter, and you make sure she's bundled up tight. And you got her a new coat at the beginning of the school year, and you've got her boots on her in case it snows. Got her bundled up tight, maybe a sweater under the coat. And you stand there at the front door,
and you watch her until she is on the bus, the door has closed, and quite often you can watch her as she walks down the aisle and chooses a place to sit down. Sometimes they wave. I have a very profound image of all of this because Agnes and I have done that very thing. We never closed the front door in the morning until the bus door had closed, until we saw our daughters, our son, seated on the bus, and the bus had driven out of sight. Then one of us would close the door. When you have done all of that, and later that afternoon you are called to a place where you are shown the pieces of her, dead. What do you do when you hear that a misanthrope like Kelly Ayotte has said that simply asking a person buying a firearm at a gun show or buying a firearm on the internet to pass a background check is an undue burden? What do you do? How do you feel? How do you, in a state like New Hampshire, get a woman like this peacefully and lawfully out of office? How do you tell her that she needs to be nowhere near any sort of governance ever again for so long as she lives? That maybe she should go to work for the NRA or a gun manufacturer. You know, maybe she'd be a great spokesperson for the cricket child's firearm. But that in the face of so many horrible, heart-rending, unimaginably awful moments as the parents of Newtown or the families of people in Aurora, Colorado or Columbine or Blacksburg, Virginia or in light of what they have faced and lived with and dealt with, and you describe a simple capital business transaction as an undue burden. Well, when you use that undue burden, haven't you shown yourself to be so utterly divorced from anything resembling human sympathy around people who do have it, people who want good government, people who want a functioning nation? Is that as stunning to you as it is to me? The idea. Jesus. So somehow or another, 3 hours have run past us already. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks for your emails, your calls. Thanks for your kind contributions that keep this all going. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.